Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, Vince Cominace.
Good afternoon to you. 307 WMAL, where Washington comes to talk. Coming up, Ian Pryor's here from Loudoun County, is the scene of a half dozen walkouts at least today. School students letting Loudoun County schools know how they feel about how they've been treated in that county. At 3:30, David Asher joins us. He was investigating the origins of COVID while he was in the Trump administration. He's got some thoughts on Anthony Fauci's latest claims and dissembling and distractions. David Asher gives us some clarity ahead. At 4:30, Chad Wolf is here, former acting Department of Homeland Security. We get the latest on the caravans headed to our border. And at 5 o'clock, Chris Bedford joins us from The Federalist as he's a part of a project to create a second internet. That's right, infrastructure designed to protect the rights of Americans to express themselves. There's a fight going on. Chris Bedford gives us the details at 5 o'clock. Great to have you with us today. You can join us on the phone at 888-630-9625. 888-630-WMAL. Loudoun County Public School students walking out of school today and saying that their county protects rapists.
Loudoun County protects rapists!
Yeah, one of a scene that was happening across the county today, school students standing up, just leaving class, walking outdoors and protesting the treatment of their classmates and the reality that they were not informed that a now found guilty rapist was allowed into a second school in Loudoun County. In both Stonebridge High School and Broad Run High School, there were students in both of those schools walking out today. Loudoun County High School, Briar Woods High School, Light Ridge High School, all of them walking out. You know, this comes after yesterday, the teen boy who was indeed wearing a skirt by his own admission in court was found guilty of sexual assault at Stonebridge High School in May. That would be of the Smith family's daughter, of Scott Smith's daughter. He was found guilty on all charges. The judge said that the facts were sufficient. The defendant committed a forcible assault. So that was the update yesterday. And now the students of Loudoun County react. Do you know these students? Are you the parent of some of these students? Would you like to tell us what exactly is going on? What's the sentiment among the students inside of these schools? 888-630-9625, 888-630-WMAL. As I mentioned, you know, yesterday's decision, a Virginia juvenile court judge found the sufficient evidence during trial to sustain those charges. The teen did sexually assault his classmate in the girls' bathroom of a Loudoun County high school back in May. The teenager, the boy, is now 15 years old, 15, who sexually assaulted this girl. He's also charged with an additional sexual assault at another high school in Loudoun County. This after Loudoun County officials moved the student to a different school without notifying the parents or the other students in the school that an alleged rapist was joining their ranks. He pulls the girl into a classroom and he molests her, allegedly, in that second incident. The judge's finding, the Washington Post reported yesterday in revealing the news, is the juvenile court equivalent of a guilty verdict in other courts. Now, this Washington Post coverage is really something else. It really is. Because it spends the guy who wrote the article, his name is Justin Juvenal, of all things. Juvenal? This is a juvenile crime? Okay, we'll go with that. So Justin Juvenal writes this story and spends most of the piece not giving a gender to the boy, to the rapist here, to the sexual assaulter. The gender doesn't come up. In fact, the first time gender is made an issue in the piece, Justin Juvenal writes that authorities have not commented on the youth's gender identity, and it did not become an issue Monday in court. In fact, the piece spends quite a bit of time talking about what is happening in the school, the young lady here, Scott Smith's daughter, and this boy who was dressed in a skirt during this event had consensual sex in the past, had some sort of consensual relationship in the past. And the Post very much dwells on this. Now, under the normal rules here, that would be victim blaming, wouldn't it? That would be victim blaming, like figuring out ways to excuse the behavior of the boy. This is how the media would treat this story if they felt like the political winds were headed in a different direction. But no, the emphasis is on, well, they had a consensual relationship before. On Monday, the teenage victim of the Stonebridge assault testified that she and her attacker had agreed to meet up in a school bathroom around 12:15 p.m. on the date of the assault, Washington Post writes. She testified that they had not explicitly discussed having sex beforehand. The teen testified that she arrived first and chose to go into the girls' bathroom because the two had always met in the girls' bathrooms in the past. When the boy arrived, the teen testified, he came into the handicap stall she was in and locked the door. The two talked before the girl testified that the boy began grabbing her neck and other parts of her body in a sexual manner. She testified she told her attacker she was not in the mood for sex, but he forced himself on her. And then she goes on. There's some quotes here that she's testified in the ways in which he was sexually assaulted. Now, again, gender identity does not come up until later in the piece, meaning what's the actual sex of the attacker here? It's a boy. It's a boy. And so finally, the Washington Post, in the confusion of how to do this reporting without acknowledging it, eventually gives up the charade and just starts calling him a boy throughout the piece. Zweig said the boy, that would be Barry Zweig, the Loudoun County Deputy Commonwealth's Attorney. Zweig said the boy repeatedly asked the girl to engage in a particular sex act, but she rebuffed him each time. The day before the assault, Zweig said the victim had been hospitalized because of a health condition that made her weak, and the defendant utilized her physical helplessness to take advantage of her. The same youth also has been accused in an October 6th alleged assault at Broad Run High School in Ashburn, as you know. So the defendant, now listen to this. The defendant told detectives that the second sexual act did not occur, meaning that they were talking about the number of sexual contacts they had on May 28th. But he later said it may have happened briefly and accidentally when a knee-length skirt he was wearing got caught on his watch as the pair were fumbling around in the bathroom stall. So you see, the defendant explained because he was wearing a skirt that at one point his watch may have gotten caught on his skirt, and that led to him accidentally sexually assaulting her. You following? I know it sounds insane. But again, the detail is he was wearing the skirt. He's in the girl's room. He's identified, according to prior reporting, including the Daily Wire, as gender fluid, right? And one other question comes screaming into focus here. Now, here's a case of non-consensual sexual assault, rape, awful story. But I think perhaps that's what's been left out of this, and perhaps that's maybe being introduced by the Washington Post. You know, there hasn't been much consideration given to the fact that there may be kids who take consensual advantage of rules like in Loudoun County about who can use what bathroom so long as they identify as what gender. I mean, what's to stop a young adult male from identifying as a girl in order to exploit the rules of the school in order to accompany her into the bathroom to engage in a consensual sex act? What's to stop that? And I know that that scenario has by and large not been a part of the conversation. A lot of this has been about, you know, the threats and the attacks. And look right here, Scott Smith's daughter, what she had to endure at the hands of someone who is identifying as gender fluid. But still, that other component is probably worth thinking about as well. As these school systems undertake these radical rule changes and pursue these radical ideologies, and in the process cover up actual assaults actually happening on campus, which has led even the students now to walk out of the school and to say that these rapes are occurring and that they're being covered up by Loudoun County. It's just awful. Joining us right now to talk about all of this is Ian Pryor. He's the executive director of fightforschools.com, a parent in Loudoun County, and he joins us on the phone. Ian, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Vince.
Your reaction to these students walking out in a half dozen high schools in Loudoun County today?
Well, you know, I think what it shows is that it's not just parents that are concerned with the direction of Loudoun County Public Schools. It's the students as well. And I think that's an important fact to note. I mean, you had the former president out here the other day saying that these phony culture wars, and no, they're not. I mean, what you're seeing is the result of Loudoun County Public Schools not focusing on its core mission, right? And there are three pieces of that core mission. One, giving kids a physical space. Two, where they can learn the things that they need to learn in order to succeed in life. And three, that they can be safe in that space doing that learning, you know, engaging in that learning. And right now, for the past 2 years, under the leadership of this school board, they've failed at all three of those things. And, you know, this is not a partisan issue. This is parents, students that are just fed up with the direction of Loudoun County Public Schools.
You know, I noticed, you know, this was a little bit less noticed, but this past week there were also walkouts in Arlington. Arlington Public Schools high school students walked out over sexual harassment and assault claims within the schools as well. So it seems, unfortunately, Ian Pryor, that we have a community problem in Northern Virginia where these types of incidents are occurring. The students don't feel protected, and they are reaching the level where they are now actively protesting their own administrations because they don't feel safe within these schools.
Yeah, and look, it comes down from the state. I mean, we're talking about, you know, policies that these school districts are focusing on, right? I mean, you take 8040, for example. All this work that they did on 8040, passing it over the overwhelming majority of the community that did not want it passed. Instead, what they could have been doing is making sure that these schools were safe. I mean, we've heard from school board members saying, you know, we're going to change the policies. Well, why didn't you change the policies before? I mean, you were so focused on passing your political agenda, to appease the people in Richmond, to appease the handful of individuals in, you know, Loudoun County that wanted this done, yet you missed the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is making sure that all students are safe to have a learning environment where they can succeed. I mean, they spent $500,000 in 2019 alone to have an investigation into systemic racism by a company called the Equity Collaborative. What have they done to keep students safe? How much money have they used to keep students safe? They're going to spend $3 million, I believe, to put in bulletproof glass in the administration building. Why don't they put that money to make the schools safer or invest in ways that, you know, they can make sure that students have a safe learning environment that they tell us all the time is what, you know, Loudoun County Public Schools is about, a safe, welcoming, affirming environment.
Wait, they're putting in bulletproof glass to protect the administrators, but they're not protecting the students who are being raped on campus?
That is correct, and that's where you see the priorities of this administration. I mean, you know, they get nasty emails, and certainly I don't condone nasty emails. But the bottom line is the bigger threats are always going to be at schools, right? Whether it's from individual students themselves or outside actors. I mean, schools need to be the priority of the school district, not the school administration building.
Yeah, that's true. It's always the students first. That should be the priority. Ian Pryor, I got to get your reaction to something else that's going on, too. The school board, National School Board Association president, Viola Garcia, who was responsible for sending that letter equating parents to domestic terrorists. We now know in coordination with the White House, subsequently getting a response from the Justice Department in the, affirming that letter and saying that the Justice Department is going to pursue parents who dissent at these school board meetings. The National School Board Association has since recanted that letter, but we've discovered that Viola Garcia, the president of that organization, has been tapped to serve on a federal education board at the behest of Education Secretary Miguel Cardona, assigning her to the National Assessment Governing Board. This creates a report card on student performance nationwide. Are you concerned about Viola Garcia now being given power by the Biden administration in the midst of all of this?
Yeah, and you know, this sounds a little bit like the Biden administration parachute program. You know, that she obviously took a lot of heat from her own board for that NSBA letter. And I'm sure that, you know, maybe she was going to be on her way out. I mean, she didn't inform the board. But, hey, you know, she did the Biden administration the favor they needed. So, you know, guess what? She gets to have a spot in the Biden administration, which is everything that is wrong with what we're talking about. I mean, we've got these political actors that are now in the education business. I mean, they've been there all along, but now it's just getting exposed. And people are waking up to it. I mean, look, if you want to have high-quality education, you need to get the politics out of schools. Get back to basics. And it looks like this administration, and certainly, you know, McAuliffe has been talking about it, that they're anything but getting back to the basics. They're all about being political servants, not public servants. And the people that are affected the most are the students that attend these schools.
Ian Pryor, one last question for you. Beth Bartz was one of the school board members you were seeking to recall from the Loudoun County School Board. After she ended up resigning from that post after you scored some success against going after her in court. Do you now know any more detail about why she chose then to resign? Was it just the pressure of the recall effort, or did it have anything to do with the apparent cover-up of sexual assaults within Loudoun County?
You know, I think it was probably the timing of the recall effort. And look, I mean, you always want to bury things where there's other bad news. And that was obviously the day that Ziegler gave his, you know, his press conference.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, the important thing to remember here is, you know, Beth Bartz is a school board member, but she's not the leader of the school board, right? That's Brenda Sheridan. And then you get the vice chairwoman, Atusa Reeser. And I suspect that they are sitting there thinking, well, you know, Beth Bartz was taking all the slings and arrows for us, and we were hiding behind her. So now we're going to get away clean. Well, look, the bottom line is they're not going to hang this on one person. They're all going to have to face the music.
Yeah, yeah, I'm certain you're going to make sure of that. Ian Pryor, thank you very much. Good to talk to you today, sir.
Thanks, Vince.
Mark Levin, weekdays 6 to 9 p.m. on Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
We've been funding ridiculously dangerous virus research. The federal government has admitted as much, but top officials, including Francis Collins and Anthony Fauci, they say don't believe your lying eyes. What to make of it? David Asher joins us next with the details. Well, good afternoon to you. 3:35 WMAL, where Washington comes to talk. Coming up, 4:30, Chad Wolf is here, former acting Department of Homeland Security Secretary and a visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation. The border crisis continues. Chad Wolf with the latest there. And then Chris Bedford is here from the Federalist at 5 o'clock as we talk about an effort that he's a part of to create a second internet, the infrastructure to support free speech online. A cool story. Chris Bedford helps when he stops by to talk about that. You can join us at 888-630-9625, 888-630-9625. WMAL. NIH Director Francis Collins, as well as Dr. Anthony Fauci, have spent a lot of time trying to explain what's going on this past week after the NIH released documents showing that EcoHealth Alliance, this is a U.S. nonprofit that is supposedly studying emerging diseases, had misled, apparently, the federal government about the existence of some gain-of-function style experiments it was doing in Wuhan, where it was making viruses, yes, more infectious to human beings. For more on this, we bring in a guy who's been studying the origins of COVID for some time. It's David Asher. He's now a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute and was responsible for looking into the origins of COVID in the State Department during the Trump administration. Hello, David. Great to have you back with us, sir.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. It's as always a bit complicated. So in layman's terms, what is this story about? What are we learning?
So there have been a series of letters from members of Congress, Republicans as well as Democrats, from the various oversight committees related to NIH, as well as other U.S. departments and agencies that funded work at the Wuhan Institute and other related institutes in China. That went largely through one organization called EcoHealth Alliance, a New York nonprofit that's sort of fronts for the Chinese, as far as I'm concerned, when you look at their behavior, even though they're 98% funded by the U.S. government. And EcoHealth was funded in 2018-2019 by NIH to do work to explore the impact of bat coronavirus that would be manipulated. I would argue it was obvious from the beginning it was gain of function, and the NIH knew darn well it was gain of function, but they somehow didn't realize it was until just in August of 2021 they received a letter, a report, I should say, from EcoHealth Alliance that said, explained the results of their experiments that they were conducted back in 2019, rather unusual delay there, 2 years, And now they've revealed that they do believe that this was gain of function research that was in violation of the grant, since the NIH had banned any sort of gain of function research that was 10 times more pathogenic. It appears the research that they actually did with the Wuhan Institute through this EcoHealth outfit with the NIH funding was 1,000 times more pathogenic, maybe 10,000 actually, if you look at depending on how you interpret the results.
Yes.
I mean, so basically we've had this mad scientist complex that has been out of control, which you've been noting for some time, and I've certainly identified when I was in the U.S. government, where everybody's trying to cover their back and warn us about don't open the can of worms because it might explain that the United States government was somehow involved in the development of COVID-19. And unfortunately, it's starting to look like that.
What's happening here is kind of interesting, though. Up until now, we've seen EcoHealth Alliance, led by Peter Daszak, walking in lockstep with people like Dr. Anthony Fauci and Francis Collins. They've all kind of been singing from the same sheet of music. But now, all of a sudden, the NIH seems to be saying, no, EcoHealth Alliance deceived us. They were working on dangerous research, and they never told us about it. This looks like they're trying to create some distance from this organization.
I'm going to make a big bet that the NIH knew exactly what EcoHealth was doing on the ground in Wuhan. I'll make a bet that when we get all the documents out of NIH, if we ever do, Congress maybe should demand documents through subpoenas for a change, mm-hmm. But the Democrats have to allow it, which I don't see why they wouldn't, because this happened under Trump, so you think that they would just want to throw him under the bus.
Right.
But the key thing is that the American people have got to know what we were doing there and how the Chinese were manipulating us. I have no sense the U.S. government deliberately was trying to create a coronavirus that would turn into a pandemic to kill millions of people around the world, including 700,000 plus Americans. But it was research that was being, which was inherently extraordinarily dangerous, being conducted under publicly available lab conditions that were totally unsuitable for the research, which anyone who has access to the internet can still find proof of. So you didn't need to be some brilliant intel analyst over at NIH, which they don't have any, let's face it. And the cover-up is worse than the crime. And that applies to China, implies to WHO, and implies to the U.S. government. I mean, we have multiple cover-ups going on. And when I say worse than a crime, let's also understand that an officially coordinated cover-up is a conspiracy, and it is a crime. So what Fauci and Collins did on February 1st of 2020 was get on a series of phone calls with doctors around the country who had initially identified that the COVID-19 sequence indicated genetic manipulation from man, not nature. And they totally reversed the story. So they coordinated, they literally doctored the narrative among doctors who were funded by NIH. That is a criminal act, quite possibly, and needs to be investigated. We're not talking about minor league stuff here.
You think the motivation here is to protect their jobs and protect their golden goose, just to keep this research going? Yeah.
This is their empire, and they spent $10 billion in the last decade on creating super pathogens that they said they were going to somehow develop vaccines for. There's no evidence that they did that. But there is evidence that the Chinese were developing their own vaccines for COVID-19 in advance of COVID-19 appearing in the public. Mm-hmm. Then in the fall of 2019, there were patents filed that were critically related to the COVID-19 vaccine that the Chinese rolled out mysteriously at the end of February and early March of 2020. Nobody can develop a vaccine that's safe that quickly, from what I've been told. So, were they working on it as an antidote? Was this truly a bioweapons program? And what we said at State is that there was definitely military funding that we believe was biological warfare related. Not that this was deployed as a biological weapon, but that they just were working on it and somehow it got out. So they were, because COVID-19 is so peculiar, as all of us who've lived through it know. It's
yes.
pernicious. We can't kick it, and it's defiant of a lot of specific therapeutics that should have worked, and we have to resort to our magical mRNA, which thank God we've got. But, I mean, somehow or another, the Chinese were up to stuff that was absolutely no good, and it would have been patently obvious to anyone who would look seriously at this. And I say there's not just dereliction of duty in the U.S. government. There's downright criminal conspiracy that I would suspect is happening, and the NIH is involved in that.
You know, Pamela Brown at CNN was questioning Francis Collins, the NIH director, over the weekend about this. I think she did a pretty laudable job, actually. She cornered it and said, she talked about basically that, like, okay, if you didn't know about this, this is pretty scary that you are leading this agency and you are this negligent on this dangerous research. He freaked out. He told her to relax on the air.
Yeah, because I mean, it's probably demeaning the way he talked. He talked to her like she was some sort of girl or something. I mean, like literally, she's a brilliant, excellent reporter. And I mean, it's insulting the way that he handled it and totally unprofessional. But put aside his put downs of an accomplished journalist. And thank God CNN's now like taking a more mainstream approach on this, because, I mean, there was never a reason for this to be a divided partisan issue. This is a disaster for all of us. What she said, she asked him, like, how did you fund this? How did it take 2 years for you to find out what the results were? Yes. Well, then he says something about, we don't know what the subcontractors, i.e., again, the work that was done through EcoHealth Alliance, believe it or not, it was never declared on the forms that were filed as part of their public filings by EcoHealth. They never said they're subcontracting all this work to China.
Yes.
Well, in fact, Collins says, well, that's a hole that the Congress has created, and we don't actually have line of sight as to where the research is being done. But I'm telling you, they were telling, I have seen enough documents from inside NIH in the course of my government investigation.
Yeah.
For me to say confidently, they knew darn well what was going on over there. So Collins is basically lying, as far as I can tell. And it's not just some semantic sort of lie. He's lying on national TV. He's lying. They're lying to Fauci's lying to Rand Paul. And I mean, it's just, this thing is going to be like the Watergate of medicine by the time we're done, I predict.
Yeah, I mean, Dr. Richard Ebright, the American molecular biologist at Rutgers University, has been accusing both Fauci and Francis Collins of just lying up and down about this research, and that this is indeed gain of function, and we were doing very dangerous research we had no business doing. You know, there was this Vanity Fair piece that came out this weekend, David Asher, headline, Major Shift, NIH Admits Funding Risky Virus Research in Wuhan. And it has an interesting thing it points to, I know you've been following closely, is that this EcoHealth Alliance, the same group that we've been giving all this taxpayer money to do this dangerous research, had back in 2018 applied for a $14 million grant from our Defense Department via DARPA. That is the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. And it's interesting because that specific grant proposal, which, by the way, was not granted by DARPA, but still, that proposal suggested partnering with the Wuhan Institute of Virology and then constructing a SARS-related bat coronavirus into which they would insert a, quote, human-specific cleavage site as a way to evaluate growth potential of pathogens, which is exactly what we get from COVID-19. Now, in addition, you've got Jamie Metzl, Democrat, in here quoted. It's a fantastic quote in this Vanity Fair piece. He said, if I applied for funding to paint Central Park purple and then I was denied, but then a year later we woke up to find Central Park painted purple, I'd be the prime suspect. And that's exactly right. So in other words, David Asher, what we have is EcoHealth Alliance applied to do this very risky research that would result in a virus that very much looks like COVID. And sure enough, COVID comes along and we don't blame EcoHealth.
Yeah, and it's much worse because not according to Dr. Steve Quay's analysis, who is a guy who did some work for us at the State Department, he's a brilliant guy based in Taiwan, American citizen. They were developing in that same research proposal not only the investment of the fern cleavage sites so it could cleave the human ACE2, your lungs, basically why so many people get sick of this and who are older with ammonia-like symptoms, but they were also given the spike, the receptor binder domain, this thing that it's part of the ability for it to penetrate the human cell, was designed to have resistance to common antibody, monoclonal antibody treatments and vaccines. So they actually were trying to create a vaccine-resistant version of SARS that could be almost unstoppable.
Yes.
And that's in the proposal to DOD, which is why they turned it down. But I would make you a bet, NIH still funded a lot of it. And some of that had already been probably done. Most it's people, almost, when they file these things, they get the they do the research before they ask for the grant. Almost never do people get a grant unless they've already shown they can do exactly what they're asking you to do. It's a sort of total racket.
I mean, it strikes me, though, David, you know, again, a layman looking at all of this, that that proposal to DARPA is virtually like a patent for COVID. Like, they were submitting their patent, right? They were like, look, we want to copyright this. This is our patent. We want to create a virus that looks exactly like COVID-19. And sure enough, a couple years later, we have COVID-19 running around the planet, and we're not supposed to look at the way taxpayer money was spent with this institution, this organization, EcoHealth Alliance.
Yeah, and as my colleague Dr. Quake concludes, says the goal was to do laboratory selection of a virus in the presence of existing monoclonal antibodies to create a virus that would infect a previously immunized individual. This is even worse. Okay, someone who was immunized for SARS. This is consistent with a bioweapons program, not a humanitarian gain-of-function program. And I totally agree, because that's what we saw. And that's why we were. I was leading the effort for Secretary Pompeo under the Biological Weapons Convention. There's an awful lot of things which we can't talk about that hopefully someday I will be able to talk about, and so can the Secretary of State and the Director of National Intelligence, because what's in public eye is nowhere near as bad as what's in the eye of the government.
Yeah, it's
and
also,
this is what's so crazy, because Fauci's got a top secret clearance. Collins has a top secret clearance. They know full well what the intelligence is, and they're hiding that too. But so is our intelligence community at some level, because you know it's we're dealing with the dereliction of duty on so many levels. It's hard to even fathom. And I say this as someone who served my country six different times in office or as a senior advisor on many sensitive programs, including penetrating nuclear weapons programs, biological weapons programs, and governments and cartels. And I mean, I'm ready to testify under oath. I would like to see if these other guys would be willing to do it as well.
David Asher, thank you, as always, for your insight. You bring a lot to the table. We really appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thanks, as always. Take care.
Breaking news. The inside story on Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
All the funding mechanisms and the way taxpayer money is being used all over the place, the lies, the deceit. It's hard to navigate through. David Asher, really talented at doing that, so we really appreciate his time today. Dan is in Harper's Ferry calling in on line one. Dan, good afternoon. You're on the Vince Colonnay Show.
Hey, good afternoon, Vince.
Hey, sir.
I just wanted to say, what y'all are talking about right now with the NIH and what's been going on with the National School Board Association and the Department of Justice, this is just one more example that our government is too big and bloated, and they don't deserve any more of our tax dollars, period. Like, not a single dime more in raised taxes, period. They need to start cutting back.
It reeks of just endless abuse and corruption and deceit. And so every one of these stories, all of a sudden, you start kind of stitching them together. You're like, would you look at the way they're abusing us? They're abusing the resources we give them.
And they're talking about raising the debt ceiling. That's ridiculous.
That's right.
Don't spend any more money, period.
Yeah, it's awful. That should not be a partisan point. That should be an obvious point to any American who cares. Like, why would you give this government that's treated you so poorly and so poorly use the resources that we give them any more power? That's insane. Yeah, thank you, Dan, for pointing that out. You know, the Washington Post editorial board is even on board with we talked a little bit about CNN going after Francis Collins this week. The Washington Post editorial board yesterday has a piece out saying that Peter Daszak, the guy who runs EcoHealth Alliance, he needs to be called before Congress. He needs to answer some damn questions, they say. They say unanswered questions keep emerging about Mr. Daszak and the Wuhan Institute of Virology. He was at the center of the public debate over the virus origins, the only American appointed to the joint World Health Organization China mission, that rigged fake investigation. Quote, why did he not disclose his 2018 proposal to DARPA for research on bat coronaviruses with the Wuhan Institute of Virology and others, which called for engineering a modification onto spike proteins of chimeric viruses that would make them infect human cells in the way the pandemic strain did? What does he know about the databases of the viruses that the Wuhan lab took offline in 2019 and never brought back? Does he know what research the Wuhan lab may have done on its own during or after the collaboration? What was being done at the Wuhan lab in the months before the pandemic? Mr. Daszak must answer these questions before Congress. His grants were federal funds. It's entirely appropriate for Congress to insist on accountability and transparency. That's exactly right. You know, one other way to think about this, even if the American funding wasn't specifically directed to something that created the virus, right, where we specifically say, okay, we're going to give this money, we're going to enhance this particular virus, it's going to, you know, in the end it became COVID-19 and it's running roughshod across the planet. Even if that wasn't the case, we're still giving money to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. This is like the conversation we have all the time about Planned Parenthood. Remember the game that's played, the shell game that the government plays with Planned Parenthood? Oh, we're not funding abortion. We're funding literally everything else that they do. The mammograms, the research, the talking to women. That's what you're funding. You're funding the water cooler. And then the rejoinder to that is always, what? Money is, what's the word? Fungible. So we invest all this cash right here, you know, to make sure the doors operate, the lights stay on, the water's flowing in. We pay for literally all of their expenses so that they can use what's left of whatever resources they have to create horrors, you know, maybe like the pandemic. It's probably worth calling some people before Congress. 4 o'clock.
Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, Vince Cominese.
Well, good afternoon to you. Just 1 week ahead, away from that gubernatorial election in Virginia. And, you know, of course, it's been going on for a while. But it wraps up in a week. That's what they tell us anyway. We'll see what happens. 888-630-9625. 888-630-WMAL if you'd like to be a part of the program. Coming up, Chad Wolf is here, former acting Department of Homeland Security Secretary, visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation. That's at 4:30. Then at 5 o'clock, we talk to the great Chris Bedford of The Federalist as he's a part of a movement to get the internet in the business of protecting free speech again, which it shouldn't have to be a mission, but it is. Chris Bedford is a part of that mission. We'll ask him how his progress is going. In the meantime, it is true, in Virginia, we're just a week away from what used to be known simply as Election Day. And, you know, you got Terry McAuliffe. Is Terry McAuliffe the single worst political candidate in history? I mean, he's really bad at this. And somehow he was already elected once, wasn't he, to be governor of Virginia. He's trying to do it again. He's just awful. He treats everyone who doesn't, you know, mouth his lyrics like garbage. He's cut off multiple interviews now, even though he demanded equal time. He demanded 20 minutes each from a couple of news outlets. And each time he cuts it off at like 5 or 10 minutes because he throws a fit that he's not being asked the questions he wants to be asked. He's mad that his opponent is whooping him, that Glenn Youngkin is apparently doing very well, according to this polling, which, again, pretty frequently understates Republican support in these polls, these surveys that we're seeing. We see it again, you know, USA Today showing Youngkin and McAuliffe neck and neck. This is a very tight race. So it really is kind of incredible what we're seeing happen in the Commonwealth. And you've got, man, Democrats are sweating. They are freaking out about what's going on. It's gotten so bad, Jen Psaki has withdrawn her endorsement of Terry McAuliffe. More on that in a moment. In fact, Phil in Fredericksburg wants to talk about this on line one. Phil, good afternoon. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, I love this so much. I love this so much. Jen Psaki violated the Hatch Act, and she came back and said, I will choose my words more carefully next time. No, Jen. You violated the Hatch Act. You need to be censored. There needs to be some sort of penalty here. You know, I just love this. I love this. This is delicious, you know?
Isn't it amazing? So she came out at a White House press briefing and indicated that the White House is going to, quote, do everything we can to help former Governor McAuliffe, and we believe in the agenda he's representing. It got so ridiculous that a left-wing organization called CREW, Centers for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, came out and condemned her for this and said she violated the Hatch Act. You're not supposed to use your official role as a government official paid for by taxpayers to campaign for anybody, especially from the lectern in the White House press briefing room. And Phil, since then, she's now claiming she released a statement to Fox. She said, while the president has publicly expressed his support for McAuliffe, we'll leave it to the press and the campaign to provide commentary on the race. I take ethics very seriously. I'll choose my words more carefully moving forward. Now, tell me something, Phil. At any other level of government, could you get away with this? Like, what about Lieutenant Colonel Stu Scheller? Remember that guy, the Marine who dared criticize the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan? Whatever happened to him for stepping out of line?
Oh, yeah. You know, he got to apologize and keep his job. Oh, yeah. Remember that? Yeah.
His life destroyed. And so you've got Jen Psaki here who's like, I'll take my wrist slap. No big deal. We're going to go about our business. It's really amazing what you can get away with. I mean, what's to stop, Phil, somebody like Jen Psaki in a close race, and this one's a close one, but I don't think it's quite as close as the media is telling us, as these polling firms are telling us. I think Youngkin's doing better than they're indicating. What's to stop any government official on the final day before the election going, well, I'm here to endorse my Democrat candidate buddy. And then they're like, oh, you violated the Hatch Act. Oops, my bad. I'm just going to go about my business now, and I promise I'll choose my words more carefully going forward. What's to stop that, Phil?
That's what's going to happen. That's absolutely what you're talking about is going to happen, and they need to stop it right now.
Yes.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, nip that thing in the bud. But they're not going to, Phil, unfortunately. But you and I can talk about it here. That's for sure. Phil, thank you. Appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Preposterous. McAuliffe. Tony is in Arlington today. Tony, good afternoon in Arlington.
How you doing?
Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
I just drove by where Biden is hosting the president for his campaign.
Yes.
And then I realized that they're having their event right across where Monica Lewinsky was interviewed by the FBI, the Ritz-Carlton in Arlington, Pentagon. I mean, could this be any stupider? Oh, my God. I can't believe they did this.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, isn't it? That's like, you know, McAuliffe, he's one of these Clinton loyalists. So maybe everything needs to happen within a certain distance of, like, famous Clinton stories, right? Maybe it's good luck for him to be near where Monica Lewinsky laid it all out. That's pretty amazing stuff, Tony, out there in Arlington. Are you ready for the associated traffic as they cart Joe Biden into town this evening?
I already have to drive all the way around. Oh, by the way, I'm an extra, so I am in the impeachment series. But
you're an extra in the impeachment series?
What does
that mean?
That means I play a reporter. I play your job. You know, a reporter, I asked, you know, chase after Monica right after the news found out.
Oh, I see. What impeachment series are you referring to, though? It slips my mind.
The Monica Lewinsky American Crime Story.
Oh.
The one that it's on FX.
I see.
And I have 3 seconds of it in it, but,
You had a line, though? You had a line? You were a reporter? You were yelling a question?
I was yelling her if she's still dating Bill, you know, but.
That's pretty awesome.
3 seconds. It was a blast.
How'd you end up with that game? You're screaming at an actress as Monica Lewinsky. Are you still dating Bill?
Yeah, it was a Jonah Hill's sister plays in it. She plays Monica. And Mia, one of the actresses, plays her mom. And mm-hmm. I had a lot of fun. We were at the actual Watergate Hotel filming.
Is it worth watching? There. Is it a good series?
Yeah. Despite my 3 seconds, which probably ruined it, the rest of the series has been fantastic.
I don't think you can be considered an extra if you have a line. If you're like yelling a line, that makes you a cast member, I think.
Kind of. I mean, I was in House of Cards for 2 years, and they get around. I like being extra.
They filmed that in Baltimore, right?
Yes, sir. They did. Yeah, for 2 years. I was season 4 and 5.
Yeah.
And wow. I had a blast.
And did you stay at arm's length from Kevin Spacey?
Yeah, no. Number one, I'm too old and I'm not gay, so I'm not his type.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's a good point. You've got an alibi. All right. Well, thank you.
Yep.
I appreciate your call. Tony in Arlington, keeping track of Hollywood and what's going on in Arlington and where Monica Lewinsky was in any given moment. Terry McAuliffe within eyeshot of that as they host Joe Biden tonight. I mean, just the idea, Joe Biden can barely fill a parking lot with cars that honk at him for a political rally. Really, Joe Biden's a big draw? I mean, again, the only point of the Joe Biden visit to Virginia tonight is to try and spur a couple of the local news outlets to acknowledge that Joe Biden came to town as a way to then further signal, hey, you know there's an election going on. And you Democrats, you better wake up. You better vote for McAuliffe. Really? You know, have you seen the polls? There are Democrats who are breaking for Youngkin. I keep seeing them in the press. They keep getting interviewed. They're like, you know, I always thought I was a Democrat. I always voted for the Democrat. Not this time. Not this time. Not surprising. Not when the candidate is, as I mentioned, one of the worst candidates I've ever seen in American politics. The guy comes out and says that parents should have no role in the education of their children. What? I mean, this guy is the worst candidate since Alvin Green ran against Jim DeMint in South Carolina for Senate. Do you remember that guy, Alvin Green? I'm sure he's a sweet guy. He's a nice guy. But he ran on one thing. They kept having him on television. And then he would say something. It was nonsensical. He would just say, Jim DeMint started the recession. And they're like, okay, but tell us more about your agenda. Should you be, you know, join the United States Senate? And he would go, Jim DeMint started the recession. He had no other answers. That's basically Terry McAuliffe's campaign right now. Terry McAuliffe. His campaign is nonsense. And even with that, he is polling close to Glenn Youngkin. Yes, we live in crazy times. It's 4:15 now.
Wednesday, Sean Spicer's got a new book. We'll talk to him, plus the latest on the governor's race in Virginia, plus Amber Athey. A whole lot coming up on O'Connor and Company, 5 to 9 a.m., WMAL.
Let's get Sam in Alexandria in here, line one. Sam, good afternoon. You're on the Viscone Show. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, brother, and what a windy afternoon it is.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
You know, I'm really shocked that nobody has even considered mentioning what a hoot it would be with all the TV stations that are going to be flocking around Arlington tonight, that, you know, people might not show up with their little megaphones and do a little bit of a let's go Brandon cheer and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, all joking aside, I'd really, really, really want to implore all my conservatives and Republican friends that, you know, this is so important. Volunteer. I saw the Republican Party still looking for poll watchers.
Right.
And, you know, we got to do that. We got to talk to people, get them out to vote. If you know Dems, don't even bring it up. Let them figure it out. But, you know, go out there, volunteer. If you've never done it, give a couple hours, sit there, especially at the end of the night, because I had the experience on the last one where there was no Republican poll watcher when they closed out, but there was a Dem there to do, help, you know, watch the counting. So you got to do it, people.
Yeah, absolutely. Good advice. Thank you. Yeah, we'll see. I bet you, Sam, there might be some Let's Go Brandon chants tonight in Arlington. Would not be surprised if we see some people out there earnestly yelling into their megaphones, maybe on some of these, maybe not on all the TV news cameras, but certainly on some of these social media cameras. Thank you, Sam. I got another prediction for you. Joe Biden's going to lie tonight. Now, I know that you know that that's going to happen. You could have made that prediction, too. But that's why we spend so much time together. We're of like mind. But Joe Biden will lie tonight. My prediction is that he's going to lie about the nature of the opposition to McAuliffe. And he's going to pull the Obama this weekend. Now, a lot of people are against McAuliffe because McAuliffe is against parents and is treating them like garbage. And parents deserve to be treated better, especially in light of the way that their children are being treated in places like Northern Virginia, namely places like Loudoun County, Fairfax County. Here's Obama this past weekend saying vile things about parents in Virginia.
We don't have time to be wasting on these phony, trumped up culture wars.
That he started, that his party started against normal people.
This fake outrage that right-wing media is peddles to juice their ratings.
Your outrage is not legitimate. It's fake.
And the fact that he's willing to go along with it instead of talking about serious problems that actually affect serious people.
Yeah, his decision to go along with it, what you're referring to, is the reason why he's smacking Terry McAuliffe around right now in the polls. That his decision to embrace parents rather than to reject them, his decision to talk about the, you know, the need to take care of the children in Virginia rather than to leave them to the wolves, that is the reason why this race looks like it does. Now, speaking of this race and what it looks like, you know, we just heard some good encouragement a moment ago that, you know, Republicans should show up at the polls. They should volunteer. They should definitely vote. But Terry McAuliffe is already laying the groundwork for this being a, quote, stolen election if he loses. He's already doing that. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, well, wait a second. I thought he was accusing Republicans and Glenn Youngkin of suggesting that the election was rigged and it was stolen. Oh, no, no, no. Terry McAuliffe has been very busy this campaign laying the groundwork to say that elections are stolen if Democrats lose. How about this? This weekend, Terry McAuliffe claimed the 2018 election in Georgia was stolen from Stacey Abrams. Listen to this. This is, again, this is over the weekend. He's like insisting that this is going on.
Democracy saying their elections are not fair.
The next day.
She would be the governor of Georgia today had the governor of Georgia not disenfranchised 1.4 million Georgia voters before the election. That's what happened to Stacey Abrams. They took the votes away.
Yeah, there you go. Glenn Youngkin sharing that. Look, pointing, like, wait a second. Terry McAuliffe has been saying that the election was stolen from Stacey Abrams. How about this? Here's another one Glenn Youngkin has shared. Terry McAuliffe refusing to say that George W. Bush legitimately won the 2000 and 2004 elections.
But in 2004, you said this about the election where President Bush beat Al Gore.
Let's go back to Florida. We actually won the last presidential election, folks. They stole the last presidential election.
You see what's happening.
Okay, so first I want to talk about this. Was President George Bush legitimately elected?
Well, we went through a very contentious 2000.
Yeah, he didn't say
remember,
yes.
And I remind you, it went all the way to the United States Supreme Court. And it took them through the second week of December to actually make a decision. And the Supreme Court, for the first time in the history of our country, stopped the counting.
He's saying they stole the election
in Florida and overturned the local Virginia or the Florida Supreme Court.
McAuliffe said
yes
they stole
no.
So that was a different. Yep, he got sworn in. Once you're sworn in, we got to move on. But do not forget that was very important that
sour
the
grapes.
Supreme Court of Florida stopped the counting of ballots.
Okay.
That wasn't the case in 2020.
Well, you came out with a new ad this week.
Sure.
Challenging Mr. Youngkin's prioritizing election integrity.
Yeah.
You said Glenn is again casting
doubt on election results. I just love them cornering him on this. Anyway, the point is, like, should you see McAuliffe lose this coming week, you understand what's going to happen. It's a rigged election. It's a rigged election, McAuliffe is going to say. It was stolen from him. He's already laying the groundwork for it. He's been saying it throughout the campaign. Look at all these elections that are stolen from Democrats. Stacey Abrams is the rightful governor of Virginia, of Georgia, that is. Maybe even Virginia. Of Georgia, that is. President Bush was never, he never should have been president. The 2000 and 2004 elections were stolen. It's all nonsense. So that's the groundwork that Terry McAuliffe is laying ahead of the election this week, this coming week, as again, it, you know, it is election day, but the election's been going on in Virginia. If you haven't voted yet, go ahead and do it. Otherwise, do it on election day. A lot of people like making that the tradition, actually, sticking to the old ways where you did the paper ballot. You show up on election day. My goodness, even show an ID. It's going to be wild. 425.
The Dan Bongino Show, weekdays from noon to 3 on 105.9 FM, WMAL.
Let's get Jill in the great Springfield, Virginia, in here. Jill, you're on the Vince Colanna Show. Good afternoon,
hello?
Jill. Hello.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. So I'm calling, and I just would like to say that what you were talking before about Terry McAuliffe claiming that there will be a fraud potentially next week.
Yes.
And I would just say, let's do a full forensic audit.
That's right. So after the election's over and when Terry McAuliffe loses and then he alleges fraud like he's been doing in the case of so many Democrats through the years, if Democrats lose, it must be fraud. That's the only explanation. It could have been it if the voters turned against them. Then you're saying, OK, yeah, let's do an audit. Let's look line by line and establish whether or not the election was conducted properly. I think that's a perfectly good idea, Jill.
I agree. Why not? Right. I think they should start doing that in the future for pretty much all elections.
Yes.
At this point.
Yes. Well, this is the rationale that they use where they have the FBI tasked with investigating normal American citizens. And they put him on this mission, and they say, what do you have to worry about? If you've done nothing wrong, why would you be bothered if the federal government was investigating you? Good question. If you did nothing wrong, why would you be bothered if we were auditing the election? 4:30. Well, good afternoon to you. 4:36 WMAL, where Washington comes to talk. Did you know that former President Trump is starting a social media network? And there is a web company set to host him with an eye towards protecting free speech. That'll be our conversation at 5 o'clock. Chris Bedford joins us. He's a part of that project. Will give us an update on how they're trying to create a second internet, again, to protect free speech, which obviously needs to be protected. I want to talk a little bit about our border right now. It's obviously very porous. The federal government doing an awful job supporting federal law enforcement, the Border Patrol. And they're just sending out, you know, it's a cattle call. It's just like, hey, everybody come right across what used to be our border. But in Texas, they've taken things into their own hands. There's a little bit of sound from a radio just overhead as Texas cops begin arresting illegal immigrants. Hear that? Sounds like a drone. This is a Fox's drone, I believe. Bill Malusian sharing this, a Fox News reporter, that, you know, five illegal immigrant men were pulled off of a train, arrested by Texas state troopers in Spofford, Texas, about 40 miles from the border. They were being checked for tattoos, obviously, that I guess would suggest gang affiliation. Texas will jail them all for criminal trespassing, and they will not be handed over to Border Patrol. This is what Texas is doing. The state troopers there and Texas National Guard taking people into custody for trespassing and then not giving them to Border Patrol for fear that the feds will just push them right into the country. Texas is taking matters into their own hands. Let's ask our next guest about this and what he thinks of Texas doing this. Chad Wolf, former acting Department of Homeland Security Secretary and a visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Secretary Wolf, great to have you back with us, sir.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
What do you think of Texas now taking matters into their own hands?
Well, I think they've been forced to by the Biden administration. And I think what Governor Abbott's doing, as well as other governors, is he's seen that they're not enforcing the rule of law, immigration, federal immigration law. And so he's having to take actions of arresting these individuals and holding them in facilities there in the state of Texas at considerable expense and cost to the state of Texas. But the alternative is to hand those over, as you indicated, to the Border Patrol, who will likely release a fair number of them to go into American communities. And the governor's been very clear that that's the wrong approach, the wrong way to do border security. You need to hold those that break the law accountable. And so I think he's basically been forced to do this, unfortunately. The federal government should be a willing partner in enforcing law, particularly immigration law. But they don't seem to be doing that under this administration.
Now, this is not because Border Patrol officers want to release all these people. It's because leaders within the Biden administration are compelling them to do that, right?
Oh, I think that's a great point. You know, these are law enforcement officers who want to do their job, who want to enforce the law. It's what they were trained to do. But you're exactly right. Their political leadership above them has given them very specific directions. And at the end of the day, these are career law enforcement officers who are going to follow that direction. But I've talked to a fair number of them, and others have as well. And they're frustrated. Their morale is down because they see themselves as, going back to that catch and release policy, which they absolutely hate. They spend a lot of their day and time and efforts and resources to catch these individuals,
yes,
only to turn around and release them in a matter of hours. It's very demoralizing.
What would be the point of doing that job? That's the fundamental question. It's like you're placing your life in some risk each day as you go out and you have to encounter strangers who are trying to illegally enter into the United States at a variety of level of threats. The cartels are clearly, they have a huge business interest involved in making sure that illicit products get across our border, as well as the human trafficking. And so the Border Patrol guys are asked not to be barriers to entry, but instead to be revolving doors. What is the point of that job?
Well, it's certainly difficult over the last 8 months. Look, but at the end of the day, these men and women are patriots. They love their country. They believe in border security. They believe in enforcing border security and immigration law. And we allowed them to do their job for the 4 years under the Trump administration. So I think that the frustration hasn't always been there. I mean, I think any law enforcement officer has been frustrated over a year and a half in the type of atmosphere where, you know, defund the police and attacks on law enforcement seem to be commonplace. But they've really been, you know, really frustrated over the last 8 months where they've been asked to do a number of things that go against not only their training, but their intuition as a law enforcement officer.
The big headline this past week was that the government has revealed that illegal immigrant encounters at the southern border was just under 200,000 in September, and that fiscal year 2021 has broken a record in terms of the illegal immigrants who've been encountered. What are your thoughts on the scale of these numbers?
Well, it's 1.7 million, and you know that's just a number. And then you add on the gotaways, those folks that Border Patrol never encounters, but we know that they have gotten through the border, and it's
at least 400,000, right?
Right. So it's over 2 million that we see have tried to get into the country illegally, and that's the highest on record ever since we started keeping these types of statistics. And I think it's just it's a very clear different direction. You know, under the Trump administration, you had a very secure border, very low, some of the lowest immigration apprehension numbers that we saw in 2019 and 2020. And you see a very different approach because of different policies taken. And yet you still have the DHS secretary saying the border is closed, the border is secure. Well, you have over 2 million people trying to get across that border. I think it's laughable that he continues to make that statement and those assertions. And I think this administration believes that the American people are dumb and they don't realize what's going on. And I think it's heartbreaking.
It is totally heartbreaking. And meanwhile, Mayorkas, who you just referred to, the Homeland Security Secretary, has said that we're not going to prioritize people who are here in the country illegally. We're not going to do workplace raids. They've decided that they're going to suspend any meaningful immigration enforcement in the United States. The effect of that is a de facto amnesty. What's the point of his job if he's not going to uphold the laws of our country, which say that it is illegal to immigrate here without approval from our country?
Well, that's exactly right. And if you do, get past control and you do move American communities, what the Biden administration has done over the last 8 months is there's been some reporting that ICE removals, enforcement actions against those that are here illegally are the lowest that they've been in decades. It's estimated that one ICE law enforcement officer, what we call a removal officer, makes one arrest per month under the Biden administration. Think about that, one arrest per month. And they're just, again, it's another way to abolish ICE without coming out and abolishing them. They're doing it little by little, policy memorandum by policy memo, not allowing them to do their job.
I don't know. Do you have any further opinion on Alejandro Mayorkas? You know, one of the things that I was really struck by of late as I was looking back, especially because Terry McAuliffe is running here in Virginia to be governor. You know, back in 2015, the Department of Homeland Security's Inspector General had released a report that showed that that Terry McAuliffe, as a part of this green tech, basically visa scandal, where he was getting these visas for Chinese citizens who were paying him a ton of money. That the tracks were greased by then Deputy Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas. Mayorkas is now the Secretary of Homeland Security and has never seemed to pay the consequences for any of this. And it just seems like sort of Washington's corruption continues at pace.
Yeah, I mean, that issue was certainly brought up during the Secretary's confirmation process several months ago, where a number of Senate Republicans had some very real concerns about that IG report and his dealings in that matter. I'm more focused on and more concerned about the policies that he's implementing over the last 8 months and how it's leading to a very insecure border and a very insecure America. And look, I think he's a knowledgeable individual, but whether he's taken direction from the White House or just not standing up to him, what they are doing to the border and to American communities is heartbreaking. And I think they're doing it because they're pandering to the radical left of their party. And they are doing things that NGOs and special interest groups have wanted to be done for 7 to 8 to 10 years. They have never gotten it done during the Obama administration. They didn't get it done during Trump. Now they're getting everything they want out of a Biden administration. So I think it's more they're playing politics with the American security.
Well, that's the through line that connects both of those stories. It's just corruption and insider dealing with, political cronies. And we're seeing it happen again, this time at the expense of our border and, of course, the American public. Chad Wolf, former acting Department of Homeland Security Secretary and a visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Really always appreciate your insight, sir. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Chris Plant, weekdays 9 to noon on Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
I was telling you yesterday about all these Facebook papers that are coming out under the guise of Facebook isn't doing enough to protect the safety of the country. And meanwhile, what that really means is they want Facebook to censor more content. That's the push by the media. Now a new story on the way that content might be censored in America, and it involves one of your favorite people. George Soros, Jorge Soros is back. Left-wing billionaires George Soros and Reid Hoffman reportedly are bankrolling a new media firm to fight, quote, disinformation. Well, that should give you the warm and fuzzies. You see, all the disinformation is going to go away. It's going to be gone. It really is amazing. The extent to which the corporate press, when they talk about phrases like misinformation and disinformation, they never mean the lies that the corporate press tell. In fact, there were some this disinformation researchers doing something called an AMA yesterday on Reddit, a Reddit Ask Me Anything. That's what it's called. It's basically a Q&A where you go in and you're like, hey, I'm a disinformation researcher, AMA, Ask Me Anything. So then all these users on Reddit, they start posing questions. Now, all of like the boring questions about why is the right so awful? Well, we're studying that. We want to make sure they don't spread disinformation. You know, all the normal crap that they're going to say. But then somebody asked like a normal question, like, hey, how did the mainstream press screw up the Wuhan lab story so badly? How did they screw up the story about Trump-Russia collusion so badly? How did they screw up the story about the kid wearing the MAGA hat standing in front of the Lincoln Memorial so badly? So badly that CNN had to settle a lawsuit for defamation. How did that all happen? And what are you intending to do when it comes to investigating that disinformation? And these media literacy people, that's what they call themselves, they didn't even answer the question. It was the number one most elevated question yesterday on Reddit. The way it works on Reddit is you upvote. So people are upvoting this question. They're like, yeah, I want an answer to this. These disinformation researchers, media literacy people, they didn't answer the question. They didn't bother. They weren't interested in answering important questions. No, no, no. They need to be a part of this fascistic push to censor the American public, and when Americans express views that don't agree with the regime, you understand how this happens, and then they dress it up as, well, we're stopping disinformation. The same move is being pulled today. George Soros, Reid Hoffman, these left-wing billionaires are bankrolling a new media firm to, quote, fight disinformation. They're calling it Good Information Inc. because everything they do is a lie. Launching today and being led by Democrat strategist Tara McGowan, according to Axios, Good Information Inc. aims to fund and scale businesses that cut through echo chambers with fact-based information. These are lies. As part of its mission, it plans to invest in local news companies. Oh, there you go. So look, just think about this. George Soros, who's already buying up local prosecutors across the country. Don't take my word for it. Just go check the FEC website, the Federal Elections Commission. You can see where Soros is investing in buying off all of these prosecutors in these local races nationwide. So it's so much easier than buying politicians. You don't have to create laws. Just ignore the ones you don't like. So buy the prosecutors off. That's what he's done. Now he wants to buy up local news companies to make sure that you don't hear any disinformation. Well, that should bring you some comfort. Eyes on this, 454.
Washington's Mall, 105.9 FM, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
George Soros wants to fight disinformation. You know, just think like a couple decades from now, there's going to be some guy in a bunker, you know, several hundred feet underground. He's got a printout of this article from Axios from back in 2021, headline, exclusive, billionaires back new media firm to combat disinformation. And he's like pinning it to the wall. He's got the yarn connecting all the articles. Like, oh, yes, this is when fascism destroyed the country. This is when all of these people conspired to destroy our ability to have rational conversations and communication. And it is really awful. It's really awful. And it's typical, too. These Democrats who pretend like they stand up for the little guy. It's all insider deals. They're all supporting these corporate interests who are trying to corner other people out of the market. And then, you know, they're being browbeaten by their own employees to crush rational conversation and debate. It's this vicious cycle. And it happened with all of these big tech firms. It has been happening. Is there a way out? It's possible. Chris Bedford joins us in a few minutes here. We're going to talk about the organization he's a part of, the effort to keep the internet a place where free thought can be expressed, including through Donald Trump's new social media company. We'll tell you about that and so much more straight ahead.
Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, Vince Cominace.
Good afternoon to you. 507 WMAL, where Washington comes to talk. Earlier this month, not that many days ago, Donald Trump announced that he plans to launch a new social media network this coming year called Truth Social. Truth Social. He wants to get people to join him there as a place to express yourself without fear of being banished simply for having an opposing view to the regime. And that sounds like a nice idea. But in order to do that, you need internet companies that will actually allow you to have a place to communicate at all. Remember the story of Parler, who at the beginning of this year, feisty little social media company, was starting to get some, you know, get a little head of steam going. People were starting to join Parler. It was the number one app on the App Store. And then when January 6th came and went, that's when the big tech companies used that as a pretext to destroy them. They destroyed Parler's momentum. Now, Parler has since come back, but boy, they really got kicked hard at the beginning of the year as they were banned by places like Apple and Google and Amazon, which hosted them. Now, it looks like President Trump is looking to avoid the fate that Parler ran into. And one of the ways he could do that is through the use of an internet infrastructure company called RightForge. And the chief communications officer of that endeavor and a senior editor at The Federalist, Chris Bedford, joins us now to give us more details about this this decision to try and create a quote, second internet. Chris, great to talk to you, sir.
Thanks for having me back, Vince.
Tell me, what is this project that you're a part of, and how would Donald Trump's social network be a part of this?
So the last 2 years have really been, in particular, have really been an awakening moment, a waking point for a lot of people who would have loved to have stayed out of politics their entire lives. Among those people, we have, of course, Loudoun County parents who are suddenly on the front lines of activism. You've got business owners who are now fighting their mayors and their governors over just trying to stay open. And among those people, you have Silicon Valley engineers and software developers and other kinds of builders and programmers who suddenly have realized that they are at a place in Silicon Valley where you no longer have a free internet. And you know, it started off with attacking Nazi groups and attacking conspiracy theorists and things like that. And people kind of nodded along with it. It was making folks uncomfortable to break from the American tradition. But those guys seemed like they're really bad dudes. So maybe they were just going to stop with that. Parler proved that wrong. Parler's deplatforming also proved that the whole idea that if you don't like something, you can go build your own, the American dream, that wasn't true either, according to Amazon Web Services, the Google Play Store, and the Apple Store, which are the absolute controllers over access to the internet. So a lot of these people left Silicon Valley at that moment, and more are still coming in to try and to build, and they have built, and they're continuing to expand it. The land exactly to build the internet on, the place that you build the sites on, the Amazon Web Services, that kind of thing, the server farms that allow these things to function. And in my opinion, I mean, a lot of people, Donald Trump is a divisive figure to some people, but if you don't think that the former president of the United States has a right to speak his mind and speak it publicly and engage in commerce, then you're not for a free internet. So we're for a free internet, and we're very proud to be working with them.
So in other words, like as these companies have gotten bigger and more powerful, they've consumed the actual hardware, the infrastructure of the internet unto themselves. And that's given them a tremendous amount of power over what kind of speech can be had within the United States. And we've seen what Amazon did. The second Amazon detected a political opponent, a meaningful political opponent of the regime that's in power, of the Democrats, they snuffed them out earlier this year. That was Parler. And so your company, RightForge, is looking to avoid that by creating some of that infrastructure, true internet infrastructure, to protect the liberty of speech online.
Exactly. We're the stopgap even below where Parler existed. When Parler was destroyed, it was exactly like you said. Amazon Web Services said you no longer have access to our servers, and they were off. A lot of companies had just assumed, I think fairly safely, that companies like Amazon knew it wasn't in their business interest to just start picking winners and losers. They weren't going to get involved with that. They weren't going to turn away customers. If they were generating revenue, then that was fine, especially if their revenue was not doing some kind of things that were illegal. They claimed that Parler was some kind of an organizer of the January 6th riots. That turned out to be completely false. Facebook played a much bigger role. Facebook was never punished for it. So when they stripped that out, they made it clear that if we don't like you, then you can't build here. And this is a problem that extends far beyond the internet, but the internet's going to be a building block for every aspect of it. For example, none of the big banks that you use, whether it's Bank of America or Chase or what have you, will make loans to gun manufacturers. And that's something that's protected by the Second Amendment.
That's right.
It's an American business. It employs Americans. They won't give them loans. So things like that are starting to show that conservatives are going to start creating their own banking system. You can be a conservative. You can be an old-fashioned Bernie Sanders the way he used to be and still be pro-Second Amendment. And now they're showing you that the First Amendment's under attack. But if conservatives are being continuously denied access to the economy and at the same time aren't even able to connect with each other on the internet, then we won't be able to build that second economy. And this second economy doesn't need to just be for Republicans or conservatives or libertarians or Tea Party people. It can be for any kind of person. You can be Glenn Greenwald. You can be over at Tesla. You can be any one of these folks who's being pushed around, being censored, or just a Christian group down in Texas or a church that's being pushed around and censored. And we're trying to create a place that just goes back to the way it used to be, of a free internet where your ideas are allowed. And if the government's got a problem with it, then they have to bring a lawyer to us, and they can talk to our lawyers.
Yeah. And by the way, it's not just the banks that are upending people's ability to purchase guns or gun sellers to sell them. You also have the credit card companies who've jumped in and said that a number of credit card companies have said you're not allowed to purchase guns with their products. It's amazing the extent to which they're flexing their power in order to dictate political outcomes in the United States. So, Chris Bedford, you know, one of the headlines today about the company that you're involved in here called RightForge, this internet infrastructure company, is that Donald Trump is said to be launching his social media company, or will be hosting at least some percentage of his social media company on RightForge. Axios was reporting this today. What do you know about it?
That's true. We've been working with Trump Media Group as a client and are happy to be doing so to give them a place, to give them an alternative to Amazon Web Services or the other places that will cancel you over a Twitter mob. And say, you, Mr. President, and your team have a right to build here, and we will protect you. We've got the server farms in California. We've got them in Texas, Florida, all over the country, and we're expanding and hiring more engineers to try and bring on right now. And we want folks to know that if they want to speak openly and freely and not have to worry about Silicon Valley, then we are the place with which to build it on.
Yes.
That doesn't mean that we're always involved in the day-to-day stuff. We are involved. We are the roadway that these things travel on.
Yeah, it's a cool project, and it's the right principle to stand up for, you know, just freedom of speech, freedom of ideas, and freedom of discourse, which with each passing day is more constrained in the United States. Nice to see somebody fight on the right side of this. Chris Bedford, always great to talk to you, senior editor over at The Federalist, and for today's purposes, the chief communications officer at RightForge.com. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
All right, it's 5:15 now.
Mark Levin, weekdays 6 till 9 p.m. on Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
All right. Have you heard this story of Celtics center Enes Kanter and what he is saying about China and Nike? forget the Daryl Morey story. Remember that whole Houston Rockets manager thing? And the Nike went crazy. Sorry, the NBA went crazy. They couldn't believe that some NBA staffer was speaking out of turn about Hong Kong. All he did was signal a little support for the people of Hong Kong. Well, Nez Kanter's taken it to the next level completely. So, first of all, he's been tagging LeBron James and Michael Jordan in his criticism of China. He's been tagging them in his criticism of Nike and its exposure to, shall we say, forced labor in China. And, you know, and this really disheartens me. You know, growing up as a kid, I loved Nike shoes. I would buy Nike products, big Jordan fan. I loved all that stuff. Now I can't bring myself to do it. As good, I'll see the shoes. I'll be like, man, that's a good-looking shoe. But I can't do it. I can't do it because of what they stand for. And because meanwhile, their company was arguing against a slave labor bill in the United States Congress. Their lobbyists were arguing to make sure that there wasn't protections against our use of slave labor in the American economy. What? So, you know, it's one of these things. And the company tries to excuse it. The companies that have been doing this have tried to excuse it. Well, you know, we try and keep the slave labor out of the supply chain. You know, you could do that. You could stop doing business in China, you know, if it's that much of a problem. Like, do it somewhere else, preferably in the United States. But they say, oh, then your shoes will be so expensive. Okay. I mean, at some point we have to fix all this. So here's Inez Kanter. He's ripping Nike this week after just a series of just ripping China. I'll share that with you in a moment, too. But here's Inez Kanter this week ripping Nike for being silent on the atrocities going on in China.
But when it comes to China, Nike remains silent. You do not address police brutality in China. You do not speak about discrimination against the LGBTQ community. You do not say a word about the oppression of minorities in China. You are scared to speak up. Who makes your shoes in China? Do you even know? There are so many forced labor factories in China. For instance, Uyghur forced labor in modern day slavery. And it is happening right now in China.
Yeah. So Kanter, last night, his team, the Celtics, had an overtime victory against the Hornets. On his shoes, they were customized. They had the words modern day slavery and no more excuses written on the shoes. Now, he's just thrown down the gauntlet. And again, he's inviting Phil Knight, who's the co-founder of Nike, to visit the, quote, slave labor camps in China. He posted this in an Instagram post today. And he tagged LeBron James and Michael Jordan as well and said, you guys are welcome to come, too. You guys are welcome to come, too. Now, in addition, here is Inez Kanter this past week going after the Chinese government for its treatment of Tibet.
My message to the Chinese government is free Tibet. Tibet belongs to Tibetans. I'm here to add my voice and speak out about what is happening in Tibet. Under the Chinese government's brutal rule, Tibetan people's basic rights and freedoms are non-existent. They are not allowed to study and learn their language and culture freely. They are not allowed to travel freely. They are not allowed to access information freely. The Tibetan people are not even allowed to worship freely.
And he's got this message for Xi Jinping.
Brutal dictator of China, Xi Jinping, I have a message for you and your henchmen. I will say it again, again, and again.
Just imagine the heads exploding at the NBA right now. What are we going to do about this guy?
Think clear. I hope you hear me. Free Tibet, free Tibet, free Tibet.
Now, in the midst of all of this, you should know China has already reacted to it. Following his Inez Kanter's posts last week in support of Tibet, in support of free Tibet, Celtics games have been pulled from the internet in China. Can't see them. You can't see the Celtics games. They just to give you a sense, like this is kind of what we're adopting here in America. You know, people who disagree with the regime, boom, they're shut down. This is what we were just talking about with Chris Bedford. Right there in China, criticism from one Celtics player. Why don't we call it Celtic, by the way? The Celtics. one Celtics player. Boom, they're shut down. The Chinese have shut them down. Xi Jinping, the Communist Party, has said, you know, no more. And this is Daryl Morey, and who who just supported the pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong 2 years ago, that he's, you know, when that happened, the whole world was lit on fire. Remember, you had LeBron James out criticizing him and was like, he shouldn't talk about things he doesn't understand. He instantly came to China's defense, you know. He was like a little lickspittle for Xi Jinping. Immediately, LeBron James, one of the most famous athletes on the planet, instantly sucking up to the Communist Party of China. This guy, I don't know much about this Inez Kanter, but at least on this front, he's saying the right things. I think that's, it's great and it's hilarious that he's tagging LeBron James. Wonder if LeBron's going to come at him now, you know, after the last round. You got to protect the sneaker income. You got to protect those endorsement deals. Got to suck up to Xi Jinping.
Washington's Mall, 105.9 FM, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
You know, this weather has been crazy these past 2 days. Have you noticed? I was driving home from the show yesterday in the driving rain. Couldn't see anything as I was making my way down the road. That's when you figure out who's the most insane on the roadways. You know, we all slowed down pretty dramatically on the highway yesterday because, you know, we like surviving our trip home. But then you see like a car go vroom, right past you. It's like some little Acura. You're like, dude, you know, there's a reason the rest of us are slowing down. And then there's the polar opposite. There's the people who are so scared to be out in the rain. They put their flashers on and they're driving at 10 miles an hour. And you're like, okay, you know, pull over under a bridge or something. You know, get out of this for a little bit until the rain dies down. Maybe get back on the road. It's pretty unsafe with you out here. But here's why it drove me crazy. I planted a bunch of new grass on Sunday. I had all this seed in my lawn. I was doing some overseeding, got a bunch of new topsoil out. I was all proud of it, you know. And you know how you plant grass and you like stare? I don't know about you, but I stare at it like it's about to grow at any second. I'll just be out there like appreciating my handiwork. I'm like, look at that. Look what I did. And so I go to sleep, you know, Sunday night. Monday, I'm driving home in this crazy rain. I get back to my place. All the dirt's washed out. Everything. All the work that I had spent hours doing. All that topsoil. All the seed is just everywhere. And then to add insult to injury, today's wind is just blasting whatever's left. It's everything's all over the place. My trash is rolling down the street to, you know, to really drive home the point. Salt in the wound. I was like, I'll be happy when all this nonsense is over. You know, I like our weather mostly. But these last 2 days have been a pain in my tail. And anyway, so I thought I'd register my complaint. If the weather's anywhere within earshot right now, just so you know, I'm not happy with you. Not happy at all. But stay safe out there. As the wind tugs on your car as you're driving down the road. We got enough problems here in Washington. We don't need weather problems. All right, hold tight. I got a lot more coming up for you as we are just days away from that Terry McAuliffe v. Glenn Youngkin race coming to a conclusion. What will it be? 5:30. Well, good afternoon to you. 5:36 WMAL, where Washington comes to talk. This is the Vince Colonnais Show. You can join us at 888-630-9625, 888-630-WMAL. The Loudoun County School Board meeting is underway right now. The public comment period under these very restrictive guidelines, only 10 people allowed in at a time. They've started with the virtual public comment portion. And so the very first parent who started speaking only allotted a single minute of time to address the school board. It's awful. But immediately he just accused the whole school board of being inept. And this is basically the tenor of how these things are going. So let's just dip in here.
You can be fired for not calling a boy a girl. You can be hunted down by the FBI if you express a concern about a divisive curriculum, and you can be put in prison for standing up for free speech when a public meeting is illegally shut down. But there are no consequences and a $275,000 a year salary if you cover up the rape of a 14-year-old girl. This is repulsive. Why does this continue? Because Superintendent Ziegler is the lapdog to the school board, a school board that was notified by Ziegler the Smith rape the day it took place, and none of you contested his testimony on June 22nd when he blatantly lied that there was no record of sexual assault in Loudoun County schools. You have lost the public trust, and now, if you have any respect, will resign or face...
Brenda Bengston?
They cut him off. His minute's up.
critical thinking is not parroting words repeat on nightly opinion shows. Critical thinking is not fear-mongering about learning a more accurate history of slavery and racism.
Oh, here it comes.
Critical thinking is not threatening violence to elected officials.
Now look at this little
critical thinking is not falling prey.
Apologist for Loudoun County. Could you imagine what just lowered her for a moment. Could you imagine debasing yourself this much that you jump in on a public comment period to suck up to the Loudoun County School Board? This lady jumping in to be like, you know, we want to teach more accurate history. Really? is that so? Because it kind of seems like you're doing the opposite. Like you're trying to constrain the view of history. You're trying to teach propaganda. And then you're sucking up to these people who have just been like awful to your children. I'm going to guess that that lady's not actually a mother of a child in Loudoun County.
Worse, Welch, I beg you to make sure that our students use critical thinking and we do too. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Arnold Ambers.
I do not see an attendee by that name.
Nathan Bailey.
Mm-hmm.
Good evening. My name is Nathan Bailey, and I'm a volunteer historian with the Edwin Washington Project. Thank you for this opportunity to address the school board. I've been a volunteer with the project for over a year now. I find the opportunity to research the public school experience of black and white children in Loudoun County from segregation in the 1870s through integration in 1968 exciting, important, and rewarding.
Okay. All right, so we'll keep an eye on what's going on in this school board meeting. But in the meantime, we've heard a number of comments now rightly ripping this Loudoun County School Board for the cover-up that it was involved in when it came to public notification of the sexual assaults that were taking place inside these Loudoun County schools. The students themselves have begun to make sure Loudoun County hears that they're dissatisfied. Today, a number of walkouts in at least six high schools in Loudoun County, the students leaving the classroom to express their displeasure with the sexual assaults going on in their schools. Obviously, their safety is paramount here, and they feel unsafe in these schools. Listen, this was a Loudoun County school today, as they were indicating that Loudoun County protects rapists. Here's the chant.
Loudoun County protects!
Students. Yeah. Here's some more. They're demanding change.
Yes, we demand change. Why was a rapist allowed into our school?
Why was a rapist allowed into our school?
He was a sex offender. Why didn't anybody tell us?
He was a sex offender. Why didn't anybody tell us? These are all good questions. All great questions from the students on a legitimate issue that they should be outraged over. Yeah, I'm not sure what that middle part was. It's not a whatever issue. It's an everyone issue. But the point is, it shouldn't be. Let me take the summary of that in this way. It shouldn't be a partisan issue. This is it was just so silly for it to be a partisan issue. That's frivolous. It's really at its core about protecting kids and being able to convey to parents that their child is potentially imperiled by their decision to put an accused sexual assailant into another school where he did it again. This week, a judge finding that boy guilty of that rape at Stonebridge High School in May. Guilty on all charges. That happened yesterday. And it's just amazing. And so what, there's kind of like two reactions on the left right now. Maybe three. Maybe there's a couple of people on the left who are saying, oh, this is awful. We should fix this. Definitely among voters. That's true. There are definitely Democrat voters who are saying, wait, what the heck is going on in these schools? What is going on? As they're watching students walk out and they're maybe waking up a little bit here. But among the sort of lefties who have power and influence, the reactions have been muted. They're pretending like this story is not even happening. That's one of the obvious reactions here. Although it's getting harder and harder to ignore. They're lying about it. They're doing what Barack Obama did this weekend, where he says that the parents who are speaking out are, that's just phony. It's just totally invented.
We don't have time to be wasting on these phony, trumped-up culture wars.
What a jerk this guy is.
This fake outrage that the right-wing media peddles to juice their ratings.
I tell that to the Smith family. Tell that to these Loudoun County parents that are speaking up at this school board meeting. I'm not talking about the ringers that the school board called in to tell them how wonderful they are. which, by the way, I should remind everyone, you remember that June 22nd meeting, the one where Scott Smith got beaten down by the cops? That was the same one that the Loudoun County School Board quite clearly had coordinated with Democrat activists ahead of time in order to fill the public comment period with a bunch of lapdogs who would run in and be like, oh, you're fantastic. Thanks for taking care of our kids. It was always a scam. Remember, they were shifting the time that the school board meeting was starting and didn't tell parents. They shifted the way to register and what time the registration began and didn't tell parents. They brought in ringers from outside the district to talk during the public comment period and didn't tell parents. They did everything they could, including beating down a father who wanted to relay the story of his daughter and dragging him out in cuffs. But he's getting his message out. It's 5:44.
Tomorrow on the Chris Plant Show, Senator Cory Booker to campaign with Terry McAuliffe, but it's hard to find a Democrat without a history of groping. 9 a.m. on WMAL.
I understand a lot of the action that's happening at the Loudoun County School Board meeting is also happening outside. There's a bunch of parents there who are demonstrating. See all of their signs. I'm seeing some photos. Loudoun County Public Schools, who's the real oppressor, calling Second Step is CRT, critical race theory. Seeing some Parents for Youngkin signs out there. So people are clearly, registering their discontent in whatever format they can there at that Loudoun County School Board meeting. Jake is in Manassas now. Jake on line one, good afternoon to you.
Hey, good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call. Say, I just wanted to say, well, first of all, you do a great job. But
thank you, sir.
I just wanted to say, as I was listening to your discussions about this and whatnot, you know, I also have the TV on and I'm watching an NBC4 and I have it muted. I listen to your show, but I have the NBC4 just muted, but mm-hmm. I'm watching it. And they put up the headline on the story and they say alleged sexual assault today. This
today.
Is after the decision from yesterday. Yes, this is just maybe 5 minutes ago.
This is after the judge, the juvenile court judge, found the suspect guilty yesterday. So that's exactly. It's a settled matter in court, but not so on NBC. They're still like O.J. Simpson searching for the true perpetrator. The jury's still out.
Yep. That's the way they headlined it. That's NBC4. It's the local NBC4. It's not national, but
gotcha.
Granted, that's how they put the headline now, up there. They said alleged.
Yes. Now there was, of course, that follow-on sexual assault. It is yet to be litigated in court, so there is that that remains an alleged assault, believed to be the same person. But thank you, Jake. And you got to stay on guard for this stuff. The language clearly matters here, and Jake paying attention to it. Let's get Ishmael calling in from Baltimore on here. Ishmael, go ahead.
Hey, I was just wondering, can they identify the parents of the perpetrator?
It's a good question.
They're adults.
The claim is that, you know, it's juvenile, so everyone's trying to keep the names anonymous here. But that is a good question. I first and foremost, I want the names of the people who decided to move the boy between schools. Like who was behind that decision, and who didn't tell the parents at the new school that he was being put in before he allegedly sexually assaulted yet another girl? There's a lot of names I'd like here, Ishmael.
They move all the boys, right? I mean that if they didn't think he was doing wrong, then they must move them all, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's okay.
Awful.
Well, I sure would like to know who raised this bastard, though.
Thank you, Ishmael.
Excuse me.
It's awful story, and your heart breaks for the Smith family, who's had to deal with all of this. You know, they were issuing some statements yesterday, basically saying that they were relieved with the finding by the judge in the juvenile court. But it's truly sad. Now, in Loudoun County, I should bring up here, there's something else happening in Loudoun County, and one of the signs that I just saw made me think of it. It's this Second Step is CRT. And here's what they're referring to. In Loudoun County, there's a program called second step, and it is infused with critical race theory teachings. Like, it's all about social emotional learning, which is linked to the core tenets of critical race theory. Over at the Daily Caller, Chrissy Clark has a report on this today that says that according to the Committee for Children, the nonprofit behind this Second Step curriculum, which is in Loudoun County, that social emotional learning is, quote, fundamental to achieving social justice. The nonprofit's also dedicated to, quote, diversity, equity and inclusion and becoming a, quote, anti-racist organization. That word, part of Second Step's curriculum, anti-racism, was a term coined by Ibram X. Kendi, real name Henry Rogers, the guy who's responsible for pushing so much of this critical race theory stuff to corporate America, albeit for a fee. They pay him a lot of money to come in and tell everybody that they're racist. This is what's been infused into Loudoun County. And here's the rub. Not only is that crazy, Loudoun County has been forcing parents to sign a non-disclosure agreement in order to view this Second Step curriculum. They're not allowed to take photos of it or send it anywhere. Huh. Why so secretive, Loudoun County? You made parents sign a non-disclosure agreement about what their children are learning? Some gross stuff happening. We'll keep trying to expose it. It's 5:54.
Mark Levin, weeknights from 6 to 9 on Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
Well, you know things are bad for Terry McAuliffe when the Washington Post is already throwing in the towel on him as well. They got a fact check on Terry McAuliffe today saying that McAuliffe has been lying about coronavirus numbers in Virginia. Really, it is a sign. They're checking the box ahead of the election here that Terry McAuliffe keeps overstating the number of children and people who are hospitalized in Virginia by dramatic margins, by ridiculous margins. He's all over the place. And the Washington Post says he's wrong. He claimed that nearly 1,200 kids were in ICU beds at one point. According to the Washington Post, there were 35 kids hospitalized statewide at that moment. 35 hospitalized statewide, not just in the ICU. Remarkable stuff. Hopefully that means the end of Terry McAuliffe's campaign. We'll see. It's 5:59.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.